him who is the eternal truth, his hosts and helpers on earth, have been set down in the sacred books and scriptures, and are as clear and manifest as the sun. These hosts are such righteous deeds, such conduct and character, as are acceptable in his sight.
That's clear enough.
Whoso ariseth in this day to aid our cause, Baha'u'llah continues, and summoneth to his assistance the hosts of a praiseworthy character and upright conduct, the influence from such an action will most certainly be diffused throughout the whole world.
Imagine that, beloved friends. Our individual conduct has an effect throughout the whole earth. It releases a spirit. In yet another place, the Blessed Beauty, Baha'u'llah, says, the betterment of the world can be accomplished through pure and goodly deeds, through commendable and seemly conduct.
I think that far too often we busy ourselves with administrative matters or the outward acts of teaching or committee work and forget this very important instruction to live the life above all else.
Well, we do. I think we agree in that often. We think of living the life as something quite separate from our teaching and administrative work. The beloved guardian pointed out that those of us on the home front can only affect other people to the degree that we ourselves have been touched with the spirit of the faith. What does he say exactly, Tony?
In July 1956, to the degree that the home front crusader is himself cleansed of these impurities, liberated from these petty preoccupations and gnawing anxieties, delivered from these prejudices and antagonisms, emptied of self, and filled by the healing, sustaining power of God, will he be able to combat the forces arrayed against him, magnetize the souls of those whom he seeks to convert, and win their unreserved, their enthusiastic and enduring allegiance to the faith of Baha'u'llah?
Well, what do you think of that, home front crusaders?
Wow.
You can magnetize the souls and win their enduring allegiance through your teaching if, first, you are living the inner life.
Yes. What are these petty preoccupations and impurities of which the guardian is speaking?
Well, on that date, July 19, 1956, he sounded a trumpet call to the individual Baha'i in America, speaking of the gross materialism that engulfs the entire nation at the present time. In fact, those are his very words. And what else does he say on that subject, Tony?
The attachment to worldly things that enshrouds the souls of men, the fears and anxieties that distract their minds, the pleasures and dissipations that fill their time, the prejudices and animosities that darken their outlook, the apathy and lethargy that paralyze their spiritual faculties. These are among the formidable obstacles that stand in the path of every would-be warrior in the service of Baha'u'llah, obstacles which he must battle against and surmount in his crusade for the redemption of his countrymen.
Oh, that's very beautiful.
And right to the point. We must be different. Don't be afraid to be different, Shoghi Effendi told us. Yes. The world has had enough advice. What it needs is example. The lives of the believers is the key to the success of all our teaching.
But what about all the work of the local and national assemblies?
Well, they're very important and wonderful bodies, unquestionably essential bodies. The National Assembly is always exhorting the friends to make a greater effort to live a Baha'i life. The beloved guardian, however, made it unmistakably clear that winning the teaching victories on the home front was primarily the task of the individual Baha'i.
Neither the local or national representatives of the community, the guardian writes, no matter how elaborate their plans, or persistent their appeals, or sagacious their counsels, nor even the guardian himself, however much he may yearn for this consummation, can decide where the duty of the individual lies or supplant him in the discharge of that task.
Is that clear, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you see, it all rests upon you, the individual Baha'i. And there's an even more powerful statement.
The guardian continues in these words, The individual alone must assess its character, consult his conscience, prayerfully consider all its aspects, manfully struggle against the natural inertia that weighs him down.
Excuse me, Bob. Yes, beloved friends, isn't that a wonderful way of expressing the day-to-day struggle that we all have? To manfully struggle against the natural inertia that weighs us down. And it is a struggle, a never-ending, constant, heroic struggle. Please go on, Bob. I'm sorry.
Manfully struggle against the natural inertia that weighs him down in his effort to arise, and shed heroically and irrevocably the trivial and superfluous attachments which held him back.
The beloved guardian concludes that statement by saying that we, the home front crusaders, must empty himself, each one of us, empty himself of every thought that may tend to obstruct his path, and following the Master's example, mingle with people in all walks of life, seek to touch their hearts. And now I'm quoting, through the distinction which characterizes his thoughts, his words, and his acts, and win them over, the seekers, tactfully, lovingly, prayerfully, and persistently to the faith he has himself espoused. And, beloved friends, we're promised complete and total victory if we'll do it.
Complete and total?
Complete and total. Listen to these words.
Whatsoever the nature of the perils and pitfalls that beset the path of whoever arises to revive the fortunes of a faith, that is, struggling against the rising forces of materialism, nationalism, secularism, racialism, and ecclesiasticism, the all-conquering potency of the grace of God, vouchsafed through the revelation of Baha'u'llah, will undoubtedly, mysteriously and surprisingly, enable whosoever arises to champion his cause to win complete and total victory.
Well, that's complete and total, isn't it? And that's a promise not for a privileged few, but for every one of us, for every Baha'i. The Guardian says, for whosoever arises, you win complete and total victory, surprisingly, but undoubtedly, and in a mysterious way. And these are just the least of the rewards we get for living the life.
Well, that's a day-to-day job, isn't it? Improving your character.
Hourly, in my own case. No signs of any halos yet.
What it boils down to is that even while we're winning the goals of the 9-year plan, we have to be winning the all-important goal of conquering ourselves at the same time, right?
Absolutely right.
Right.
If we hope to have a spiritual conquest of the planet, we must first have a spiritual conquest of ourselves. Why should people become Baha'is and enter the Baha'i community if they don't find there anything that's different?
Well, I remember very well a letter which the beloved Guardian wrote to America in 1943.
What did he say, Bob?
Well, he said, if people only realized it, the inner life of the spirit is that which counts. But they are so blinded by desire and so misled that they have brought upon themselves all the suffering we see at present in the world. The Baha'i seek to lead them back to the knowledge of their true selves and the purpose for which they were created, and thus to their greatest happiness and highest good.
Beautiful. I think most of us really know these things in our hearts. What we need is the inspiration to put them into everyday practice.
Yes, how true.
Sometimes we get discouraged because there seem to be so many pressures. So much hurry, so many deadlines, so much to do.
Well, we shouldn't. I'm sure Michelangelo or Beethoven didn't fuss or worry about goals or pressures or deadlines. They were in love with their art. The inspired composer can't keep his pen still. The singer longs to sing. The miner who knows there's gold in the mountainside is not discouraged because of a deadline or because he has to work overtime to get it out. He can't help it.
Yes.
No, it should be the same with us. If we're filled with the Spirit, everything will be easy and a joy. We'll become so excited about what we're doing. It won't be a duty. It will be a delight for which we'll hunger and be eager to work at, beloved friends. It requires an effort if we wish to become noble.
I'd like to feel that I was able to become noble.
Yes, who wouldn't?
Well, I guess we all would. Well, all right, fine. Because Abdu'l-Bahá has told all of us just how we can do it.
What does he say? I, for one, would certainly like to know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bob, what are the Master's words on nobility?
Well, Bill, Abdu'l-Bahá says this. It is possible to so adjust oneself to the practice of nobility that its atmosphere surrounds and colors all our acts. When these acts are habitually and conscientiously adjusted to noble standards, with no thought of the words that might herald them, then nobility becomes the accent of life. At such a degree of evolution, one scarcely needs to try to be good any longer. All our deeds are the distinct expression of nobility.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Nobility, anyone? Well, that's it. Practice. Nobility. Practice nobility, the master said. Act noble until it becomes a habit. And without knowing, and not knowing when, suddenly, you are noble. Let's hear one of the most often quoted paragraphs from all of the writings of our beloved guardian. Also written, remember, over 40 years ago. Tony?
Not by the force of numbers, not by the mere exposition of a set of new and noble principles, not by an organized campaign of teaching, no matter how worldwide and elaborate in its character, not even by the staunchness of our faith or the exaltation of our enthusiasm, can we ultimately hope to vindicate, in the eyes of a critical and skeptical age, the supreme claim of the Abha revelation. One thing, and only one thing, will unfailingly and alone secure the undoubted triumph of this sacred cause, namely, the extent to which our own inner life and private character mirror forth in their manifold aspects the splendor of those eternal principles proclaimed by Baha'u'llah.
That puts a challenge to us, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Tremendous words.
Well, you know, there are people who keep saying that you can't change human nature, but in Baha'u'llah in the New Era, Dr. Esselman, he makes it very clear that the one thing we can be sure of that doesn't change is the law that everything changes.
Yes.
But let's hear Baha'u'llah's own words on this subject.
Baha'u'llah writes, "Is not the object of every revelation to effect a transformation in the whole character of mankind, a transformation that shall manifest itself both outwardly and inwardly, that shall affect both its inner life and external conditions? For if the character of mankind be not changed, the futility of God's universal manifestation would be apparent."
So if we want a spiritual civilization, we have to have a spiritual man, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's why the messengers of God appear. You can't make a golden society out of leaden individuals. Yeah. It's our most important single duty to improve our inner life. Abdu'l-Bahá told us so.
That's right, Bill. The most vital duty in this day, Abdu'l-Bahá writes, is to purify your characters, to correct your manners, and improve your conduct. The beloved of the merciful must show forth such character and conduct among his creatures that the fragrance of their holiness may be shed upon the whole world and may quicken the dead, inasmuch as the purpose of the manifestation of God is to educate the souls of men and refine the character of every living man.
Well, do all of these things apply to the pioneers as well as to other believers?
Well, if they don't, you may have found a way to raise up an entire army of pioneers.
Oh, they apply all right to every single pioneer as well as anyone else. You know, a pioneer doesn't become a saint by leaving his native land or city for someplace else. He may become a hero or she may become a heroine. And that's a mighty important start, and it does attract the help of the Supreme Concourse, our writings tell us. But the pioneer, too, must undertake the inescapable task of reforming his own inner life as well as anyone else. You know, Horace Holly, hand of the cause of God and an historic figure in the history of our faith and a very witty and wonderful man, once wrote, "A pioneer is not someone who moves from an old place to a new place, but someone who moves from an old self to a new self."
Yes, is that beautiful?
And Abdu'l-Bahá has made this quite plain about pioneers. Suppose we turn to his words.
"Should any one of you enter a city, he should become the center of attraction by reason of his sincerity, his faithfulness and love, his honesty and fidelity, his truthfulness and loving kindness towards all the peoples of the world, so that the people of that city may cry out and say, 'This man is unquestionably a Baha'i.'
Mm-hmm.
For his manners, his behavior, his conduct, his morals, his nature and disposition reflect the attributes of the Baha'is."
And I believe the master concludes that statement, Bill, with these words, Not until ye attain this station can ye be said to have been faithful to the covenant and testament of God.
Yes, he does indeed. Imagine that.
I'm coming to the conclusion that the things we've been talking about tonight are in reality the most important things in the faith.
Let's take a vote on it.
It's a landslide.
A landslide, that's right. And aren't we lucky? We don't have to change anyone else, only ourselves.
Yes.
I'm not so sure that's lucky.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of that we're often heard complaining, the world's deaf, the people aren't interested, they're too materialistic, they're too busy with other things, they don't care about religion.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, exactly. But now we have a person who is interested. Ourselves, us. Here is someone about whom we can do everything, ourselves. There's no possible excuse for failure now. And by doing it and changing ourselves, we can see a change take place in that outer world that hasn't responded before. And we begin to see why it didn't respond. You know, you can hold an iron bar over steel filings forever and nothing will happen. But place a magnet over them and the sparks will fly upward, the steel filings, attracted by its power. Baha'u'llah tells us how we can all become such magnets, how we can attract the hearts of the people. Have you any idea of the power and majesty of just one righteous act, one pure deed? Listen to what Baha'u'llah, the Blessed Beauty, writes.
One righteous act is endowed with a potency that can so elevate the dust as to cause it to pass beyond the heaven of heavens. It can tear every bond asunder, and hath the power to restore the force that hath spent itself and vanished.
My heavens, that's tremendous. You know, from the sublime to the ridiculous, Bill, I see June Lees has just brought in the refreshments for our intermission.
Well, good. You have to be balanced, you know, both material and spiritual. But, beloved friends, please, before we stop the flow of the Spirit, may we share with you these closing words of the beloved Master.
The greatest bestowal in the world of existence is a tranquil heart. And it is impossible for man to obtain a tranquil heart save through the good pleasure of the Lord. That is, man may so adorn the temple of his being with lofty attributes and philanthropic deeds as to be pleasing at the threshold of the Almighty. This is the only path, and there is no other path.
My point is this. Let your thoughts, your ideals, your aims and purposes revolve day and night around one common object. That is to live in accord with the good pleasure of the Lord. Then all the doors of felicity will be opened before your faces, and you will become successful in all your undertakings, and you will be confirmed in all your accomplishments.
Isn't that a wonderful promise? And the beloved Master concludes with these words. The basic principle is the good pleasure of the Lord. And the good pleasure of the Lord is obtained through a tranquil heart. And the tranquility of the heart is gained in living in accord with the divine teachings and exhortations.
When a person attains to this position, he is contented and peaceful. Then will he become prosperous in all his affairs and enter paradise.
This station, the Master says, is joy succeeded by joy, confidence after confidence, and paradise after paradise. Having reached to this exalted station, a man lives in paradise while upon the earth, is in paradise when he leaves this world. His heart is in paradise, his spirit is in paradise, and he is enriched with paradise. Well, how do you like that, beloved friends? Isn't that a promise?
That's beautiful. That is magnificent.
We have come to the halfway mark in our study class on the importance and significance of living the Baha'i life. We hope that during your intermission, you too will continue this discussion. We shall return soon with the second half of our study class with more suggestions on how we can all make greater strides in learning to live the sort of life which Baha'u'llah has envisioned for all of us. We shall also begin the second half of our study class with a brief quiz on the faith. So be sure to have pencil and paper ready. As usual, we have saved the very best for the last. The second half of our study class on the significance and importance of living the life is about to begin. However, as we promised you, we shall have a brief quiz before starting our discussion. So, if you have your paper and pencil ready, here are Mr. Sears and Mr. Lease with the questions and the answers.
Thank you, Bob. Everyone will correct his or her own paper, of course, so only you'll know if you're right or wrong. Isn't that nice? Those of you who are listening at home,